What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. Drantzer, of course, covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. What's going on, Drantz?
Not much. Good night of hockey last night. Tough one again for the Canucks on the out-of-town scoreboard with the Minnesota Wild playing terribly against the New Jersey Devils but stealing a point. And the Calgary Flames. Man, you gotta... it's pretty incredible that they picked up points in six straight.
Yeah.
Right. As the Blues haven't lost obviously in a long time, but the Flames have legitimately kept pace. Not to the extent that the Blues,
not to nine wins in a row.
No, but I mean the Blues, for example, if you look at sort of the last 10, they're, 9-1-9 or 9-1, outrageous. But the Flames also have 12 points in their last 10. They've picked up points in seven of those games. And most of those losses come a while ago, right? They're finding ways to extend games. Fourth line scores two third period goals against a Colorado Avalanche team that is looking terrifying. That I struggle to imagine them losing 4-7 against anybody. They might. I just watch them and struggle to imagine how it happens. That's tough. Calgary very much... in the mix with a 25% shot here, two games in hand over the Blues, a game still head to head against them. For the Calgary Flames, the Wild are in a pipe dream. For the Canucks, I think they are.
Yeah. Landon Ferraro is going to join us in studio for an hour starting at 12:30. So in the next segment, always look forward to that with Landon. The Canucks don't play until tomorrow. They host the Kraken. They are practicing today. So that's right.
Literally
as
right
we
now.
Speak. So let's get into that and more on the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 1st. April Fool's Day. Are you an April Fool's guy?
Do I seem like I'm...
I don't know. I could see you being into pranks.
Do you think I'm into fooling?
I could see you being a court jester.
I could see him being a prankster.
Wow, that is not true. I'm definitely the prank guy who's bad at calibration. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Your prank is horrifically offensive to somebody.
Yeah. It's either horrific.
Cancelable.
I'm bad at calibrating pranks. They're either horrifically offensive or it's
not funny at all.
Yeah, not funny at all.
Do you
exactly.
fall for pranks easily?
I'm pretty gullible.
See, I wouldn't guess that.
Yeah, I'm trusting.
Jamie,
really?
What about you, Jamie?
I'm not an April Fool's guy. I don't care for it. I find pranks, they're a waste of my time. I value my time. And I'm don't waste my time with this.
The irony of this is that we did the Canucks breakfast prank this morning.
I actually thought that one was pretty funny. I thought that was a good one.
Guess who quote tweeted it?
David Amber,
Amber.
Yeah, it was successful.
I'm texting him.
I just thought, though, that we should have gone even further and done the whole, Canucks meals and eating lineup from the morning, then Canucks breakfast, Canucks brunch, Canucks tea time in the afternoon, Canucks dinner, Canucks midnight snack, the whole thing. Yeah. I think we could have really, that would have been good. Take it one step further.
I just want to say there is a Twitter account at filled with urine that summed up my
feeling. Beg your pardon?
What?
Maybe just shorten that to FWU next time.
Sorry. No, you
filled
have to
with
read
urine.
It.
That's how you follow them. I'm sorry. Do you want me to plagiarize this tweet that I'm about to read to you? Or do you want me to source it appropriately, producer man? Do we care about standards here?
Not at all.
Well, my bad. They summarized my feeling about April Fools very well today on Twitter. April Fools. So I'm a fool because you betrayed my trust.
Yes.
I'm a fool for holding what you say with complete sincerity. I'm not the fool you are.
There you
go.
That
is such a transcoded.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, anyways.
That?
Anyways, we did go to the whiteboard here, so let's start with the headline. And you mentioned it a little bit, but the Canucks simply do not get the help they need, they desperately need, on the out-of-town scoreboard. Of course, Minnesota picks up a point in a shootout loss to New Jersey. Calgary rallies for a shootout win against the Avalanche. And I know people have kind of just been focusing on St. Louis and Minnesota, and to a degree I understand that, because if you're going to catch one of those teams, you're going to get red hot, and there's a good chance you pass Calgary as well. But Calgary is in a much, much stronger position now than the Canucks are, and you can't, like, you got to jump over them. You have to at least outperform them if you're going to pull off this miracle. So them winning is a big deal.
It's another leg to the parlay.
Yeah.
You need to now, what, they have, so how many games in hand do they have over the Canucks?
One.
Okay, so they have, you have to outperform the Calgary Flames, right, by 1 point or two. The
they're 1 point up with one game in hand.
And what's the tiebreaker situation?
Even. Dead even.
Literally
right now.
Dead even, yeah. To the third tiebreaker. Okay. So you need to outperform them by 1 point over the balance of the season, despite them having a game in hand, and that's a third leg of the parlay. You know, like, while also needing to get red hot yourself, while also needing St. Louis, one of St. Louis or Minnesota, to fade desperately down the stretch here.
And for all of the, you know, I think the Minnesota game is really instructive as well, because for all of this talk that, hey, Minnesota's not playing well and they've stumbled here and they've left the door open, you know, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10. So that's 10 points in their last 10.
Yeah.
And that's without playing good hockey. Well, and they didn't play great last night.
And
but
they'll get Kaprizov back.
But it's also just like, it's the NHL. You stumble into points even if you're not playing that well.
Right.
Right? Like, teams rarely go on, you know, 10-game regulation loss losing streaks. There's usually loser points. And you get into a shootout. And, like, stuff happens in there to prevent you from going completely over. So they don't even need to play well. They just need to stumble into, like, what, 5 more points in their final 7 games?
How many teams do you think have a 500 point percentage this season?
Ooh. 23.
Yeah, well, nailed it.
Oh, wow.
On
Look at me.
On the nose. No, April Fools, you got it wrong. No, I'm kidding. You actually did nail it. Well done. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's like, it's not that hard to go NHL 500. Two-thirds of the league does it.
Do you know who's 1 point back of 500 point percentage? The Anaheim Ducks.
Who are, by the way, also not mathematically eliminated yet.
Jesus.
Which is like, I think everyone is like, there's an appetite for the Canucks to be quickly mathematically eliminated. It's like, it takes a while in the NHL. You have to really be out of it to be mathematically eliminated.
And one thing I'd say is, like, this is one of my issues with, like, the gold system. Right? The idea that mathematically eliminated, because if you're the Canucks, or maybe not the Canucks, but certainly if you're the Penguins at this point, the incentives are the same as with a tanking system right now, like, until you get eliminated.
Right, right.
So I don't like that. Anyway, so 500 point percentage, low bar. Look, the Canucks are, it's not realistic anymore. They need a miracle. And last night was another moment where the miracle story did not begin to break in their favor.
Yes, I think that's the best way to put it. So the miracle just gets a little bit longer with Minnesota and Calgary both picking up points. And the other headline is, as we mentioned, Canucks are back at practice as we speak, or at least getting on the ice as we speak at Rogers Arena. And I just saw an update from Brendan Batchelor. I think the big topic of interest at Canucks practice today will be the health status of both Nils Höglander and Elias Pettersson. And Batch said just a few minutes ago, Canucks are about to take the ice for practice at Rogers Arena. Nils Höglander is wearing non-contact red. No sign of center Elias Pettersson. Now, we'll see if that remains the case for practice or if he's a late arrival. But non-contact red is the update there from Brendan Batchelor for Nils Höglander.
So that's, you know, we like to think about it this way in terms of process, right? You make it through a practice, Rick Dhaliwal reporting that Höglander was skating last week. So, you know, this could be one of those situations where you make it through a full practice, you feel good the next day, and you're cleared to play against Seattle, right? That very much could be in the cards. We'll see exactly, like, if he's limited at all, if he leaves early, exactly what this practice looks like and what Rick Tocchet has to say about it. But very good sign for Nils Höglander and the Canucks getting some forward reinforcements, even if they're not down the middle of their lineup where
they really desperately need it. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, especially against a Seattle team that, even with Hedl and Pettersson in the lineup the last time they met, kind of overwhelmed the Canucks with their speed down the middle. Like, it was a noticeable feature of the game. Now that Shane Wright's kind of figuring out and really carving out a promising future in the NHL right now, I think that's a mismatch, and that's a mismatch that's exacerbated, you know, by magnitudes when you're talking about first line center Pugh Suter and second line center Atu Ratu.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the other part of this, and we can kind of
move...
third
line center Teddy Bluger.
Yeah, and we can kind of move into the broadsheet here as well, because you mentioned Dolly Wolf, the update on Hoglander that he skated last week. Now, I believe he also said that Elias Pettersson was skating last week, but seems to be less clarity on exactly what Elias Pettersson's injury is or his timeline might be. Hopefully we hear more from Rick Tocchet after the team practices. But I do think that Philip Hedl has kind of become a forgotten figure in this as we talk about the team's center depth and where it stands right now. And the update from Dhaliwal on Philip Hedl was basically unclear. He's probably in concussion protocol. Not sure if he's out of concussion protocol yet. And when you're talking about a player who may or may not be in concussion protocol with his history of head injuries this late in the season, it starts to be pretty daunting, I think, to see Philip Hedl back this year for the Canucks. You never know. Obviously, things can change quickly, but it would be one thing maybe if they were right there and it was a coin flip for them still to have a chance at making the playoffs. But as things stand and as long as their odds are, no news, no real update on Philip Hedl again. We'll see where it goes, but doesn't sound like he's close to returning for the Canucks. Lots of other stuff to get into from Donnie and Dolly today on various different Canucks items, and including they had Elliot Friedman on and talking about the latest on Pugh Suter, who has done, you know, has continued to put up points post deadline, especially now with the expanded opportunity he's getting at the Canucks at the top of the lineup. And Friedman had this to say that, you know, they're talking about the Canucks talking so much about needing to upgrade at center. And as he puts it, the solution at center might be the guy you have there already. That is Pugh Suter. Says the Canucks didn't like what the numbers were at the deadline, but they might, and that means like his salary demands were at the deadline, but they might have to reconsider. And that's a tough spot because they haven't gone down since the deadline. No. He's played really well, so they've probably gone up. So if you didn't like him then,
yeah, if you didn't,
you
like,
might just have to talk yourself into them. I get that, but that's
no,
that's tough.
That's an indictment. That's a process indictment,
mm-hmm.
Right? You know, my sort of understanding of it was there was interest in Pugh Suter, like, you know, that not at the same level where the Canucks were making a price enforcing decision the way they did to hold Brock Besser, right? I think the club was balking at the idea of doubling his salary then. So if we see them change their minds, reverse course, and sign something, you know, $3.5-4 million plus AAV, that's an organization that changed their mind based on a small sample of games. That's not what you want to see if you're a Canucks fan looking for like faint signs of hope, or just like the level of sort of competence, ruthlessness, business-mindedness that, you know, for all the ups and downs, I think has mostly characterized the Rutherford-Alvin era. Like, this would be a departure from that and a very concerning one.
Yeah, and I get it, right? You see, you know, like...
You know I love Pugh Suter.
Like, Friedman drew the line to the Chychrun contract, and it's like, well, people weren't expecting that, but the cap's going up and all that.
Oh, that's not... You weren't expecting that with the cap going up? By a 3-year, like, agreed upon regularized interval, that's fine for a fan texting into the inbox. That's not fine for millions of dollars worth of executive talent running an NHL team.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, it's not something that we should like ameliorate our level of criticism or skepticism based off of. Like, that's the job, is to anticipate this sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's just. And it's hard. You connect it to the Brock Besser thing at the same time, right? Yeah. And now who knows what's happening with his number?
The moment you go by the deadline without selling these guys, your leverage diminishes. We know this. And if those guys play well, and let's be real, I mean, how many, do those guys combined have like 12 of Vancouver's last 25 goals or something?
Yes, they've both been on fire.
On fire. Their leverage has enhanced. The Canucks has gone down. Like, this is what we were talking about this when the Canucks stood pat at the deadline. You know, it's, anyway, look, I still think if you pay Pugh Suter at the top of his quote-unquote market, the truth is that you're still getting probably a fair deal given his high level of true talent. So this isn't one of those where I think you worry too much about it. I think he was so undervalued that, like, the scale of the error, if you've changed your mind on extending him long term based on what you've seen since the deadline, is like going from it. The scale of the error is not you've backed yourself into a corner and now have to overpay and make a mistake. It's like it's opportunity cost. It's more like you've missed an opportunity.
Yeah, like you could have gotten him at 3.5 instead of 4 or whatever the number is. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, it, you know, that at least is relatively small potatoes and not something that we should worry about. I think more than anything, it's just like the process of that. If Friedman's characterization is accurate, based on what I know, I think the club was balking on doubling his salary was kind of what
which
I was hearing.
Which would have been
3.2. Yeah. Oh, and in and around there. So, and again, that's just what I was hearing at the time. Yeah. So if we see them sort of buckle or bend on that. If we see a deal that's not really a give and take type deal where you could see how both sides are in the middle.
Yeah. The benefit for the Canucks on the deal. Yeah.
You know, then I think we will look at that and quite rightly say, hey, not the good player, fine deal, not a grievous error, but a troubling process indicator in terms of organizational decision-making and foresight.
Yeah, and as you said, opportunity cost, a chance to lock a player in at a cheaper number and then ultimately having to pay more. The other thing I would quibble with is I, obviously, based on what I was saying yesterday, I'm a big fan of Pugh Suter. I don't think he's the solution at center.
No.
You know what I mean?
No,
like, we're like, so as much as I really like the player and think he helps you a lot, I also understand wanting to keep your salary cap sheet as clean as possible going into the summer to see what you can do with an extra, you know, $4 million in salary cap space. Like, in some ways, you're just locking into this version of the team, which we know wasn't dynamic enough, wasn't dangerous enough. Again, I'm not going to have any issues, really, if Pugh Suter comes back because he has been so effective for them. However, you can't go and look at it and say, well, hey, there's our second line center. Like, we all know how much they desperately need to upgrade down the middle, how they actually need to upgrade it forward. If you think there's a path to doing that while extending Pugh Suter, that's fine. But you have to make sure you keep your options open and don't close anything off by signing him to an extension. Couple of other notes. Friedman again on Donnie and Dolly. On Besser says the Besser camp seems to think there's a number that will be available elsewhere. And the Canucks are just below that. So remains kind of status quo on the Brock Besser front, I think. You know, who knows how everything around the deadline played out for Brock Besser and Brock Besser's camp, how that affected their willingness to negotiate, to take a little bit less to stay in Vancouver. At this point, I'd be very surprised if Brock Besser returns, but you get down to crunch time, you never know. A guy who spent his whole career here, that can be a difficult decision to leave. So I'm not going to write it off completely just yet.
Stranger things have happened.
Absolutely, I have.
But, I mean, the vibe is not good around that one.
No, you wouldn't think so. No. And then the last thing from Rick Dollywell on Tom Vilander, who says he's been told that going back to school for a third season is now an option.
I'm going to react to this one the way the Canucks will when that's brought up in negotiations.
Laughing?
Yawn. A giant yawn.
Well, it is kind of funny because it's like, well, if I can't go to the NHL and burn a year, well, maybe I'll go back to school. It's like, well, that also doesn't burn a year if you're ELC.
No, but I mean, that leverage point is implicit for collegiate players, right? And obviously it's enhanced by the extent to which life is good in the Boston metro area playing college hockey. Like, that is fun. That is a really cool experience. Yeah. For Pandolfo and company, you know, the school's probably going to replace all the guys that leave with elite players, just like they replaced Lane Hutson and company with Yzerman this season, right? Like, that's it's a good place to be. That said, you know, this is a pro ready guy. Like, this is a guy who's ready to play NHL games if he really desperately wants it. So I think this is probably much more about, you know, the bonus structure. Schedule A bonuses matter, right? Like, there's $850K a year on the line, can be more if you get into schedule B territory, and they're performance based. It's things like plus minus minutes played. Like, for a defenseman, especially in sort of the third year of a deal, when you're going to be, in his case, 22, 23, like, there's a realistic shot that he hits those, that's material. My guess is Canucks, who have been What was the opposite of spendthrift that we encountered? Skinflint?
Skinflint, yes.
In terms of handing out bonuses on ELCs, my guess is that's really what this is going to come down to, dollars and cents. And then, you know, if Villander feels strongly one way or the other about whether or not he wants to start in the NHL or the AHL, my guess is, based on the level of confidence that the Canucks seem to have, that they'll be able to get the AHL side. My guess is the two sides are probably more on the same page there, and this is mostly about bonuses. But you're 2 years away from exercising that Kevin Hayes, Jimmy Vesey, Justin Schultz route. Like, I don't think that's a leverage point that's going to cause the Canucks to consider blinking.
Well, and even on an ELC, that's still what? Like, what's the bare minimum he's making? Like $850,000, something like that. You know what I mean? A year. So,
well, no, that's if you're in the NHL.
If you're in the NHL, that's fair. Deal. But like, you're probably going to be in the NHL next year. There's a very good chance you're going to be in the NHL next year.
For the whole season. I don't know.
Okay, like, but even if it's part of next year and then all of the year after that, that's still over $1 million. You're saying goodbye to. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Over the next 2 years, if you want to go that route. So like, that's significant. That life can be as good as you want in Boston, but that's still a significant amount of money.
Elbows often go out.
Yeah.
In negotiations. You know what I mean? This one, from everything I've heard, I think will be relatively straightforward, but you know, that will probably require the Canucks to bend a bit at the death to just get it across the line on their too strict, frankly, too strict relative to how other NHL teams have done it. ELC structures as it pertains to Schedule A and B bonuses.
All right. Lineup notes. As mentioned, the Canucks are practicing right now. Haven't seen any further updates from Batch. We'll keep an eye on that. His last update was that Nils Höglander was on the ice in a red non-contact jersey. No sign of Elias Pettersson. We will have more on what transpires at Canucks practice and hopefully some audio from Rick Tocchet to play a little bit later on in the show. Playoff and standings update. As a result of the results on the out-of-town scoreboard last night, Canucks playoff odds ticked down very slightly per Dom's model from 13 to 12%. Calgary gets a really nice jump from 14 to 22%. St. Louis down slightly, 80 to 76. Minnesota, 92 to 90. And what that says to me more than anything else is, one, Calgary's still very much alive in this race, but also the Canucks are kind of a sideshow to this. Like, all of the significant movement is happening with Calgary and St. Louis and, to a lesser degree, Minnesota. So even a bad night on the out-of-town scoreboard doesn't change things that much for the Canucks. But
that I already reported 48 hours ago. Don't do it.
But Calgary can still significantly improve their chances. They're still very alive in this race as a result of getting that shootout win last night against Colorado. Do you have a gambling update for us, Trance?
Yeah, Canucks now plus 850 to make the playoffs. So odds go down from 7.5 to 1 to 8.5 to 1, basically, as a result of the Wild picking up a point and the Flames picking up a unlikely shootout win.
An extremely unlikely shootout win.
Against an opponent that they were widely expecting.
And then Dan Vladar giving one of the quotes of the year.
Yeah, so sick.
The strongest team in deep inside our hearts.
You know what? Let's go, though. Like, let's go.
What a beautiful sentiment.
If you have a season that unlikely, like, that Flame season could have gone so far off the rails with guys like Kadri, Huberto, Uyghur being attached to a rebuilding project that they absolutely didn't sign up for. And instead, they're all playing, like, clutch hockey. You know, like Uyghurs with that goal-saving save at the end of overtime. Like, they're playing clutch hockey in big moments. They're clearly just, like, completely bought in as a group. Like, it's such good vibes. So they sure earn that. By the way, in terms of relevant games for the Canucks on the out-of-town scoreboard tonight, Calgary Flames play in Utah on the second leg of back-to-back. The Utah Hockey Club minus 185 favorites. So the Flames are heavy dogs in that one. The Blues minus 185 home favorites hosting the Red Wings.
All right, that's the whiteboard. Landon Ferraro joins us in studio for an hour coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.